Hello, I'm Akron, Ohio. This is episode 124 of On the Tropes. On this week's episode, we're going to talk about Westworld, the 1973 Michael Crichton film, right?
Right.
Right. Right.
Oh, everybody saw it? Baby.
All right, all right.
Okay, no, we're going to talk about the HBO original series, Westworld. So we're going to try to dance around spoilers for a little bit at least, and then we will probably end up going heavy into spoilers, or if you're super sensitive.
Yeah.
We'll give the spoiler warning.
Yeah, we'll have a wall that says.
Yeah.
Don't we have a noise?
Do we? Oh, we do. It's from Doctor Who. Anyways, as always, I'm your host, Nick, and today I'm joined by...
Sir.
Domo.
And Kyle.
So who was the first one here to watch Westworld? Was it? I think you saw it before I did,
watched
Kyle.
The finale live.
Okay, you were up to date because I caught up to it a little bit late.
Yeah,
give us a brief rundown of.
You're gonna have me give you a brief rundown of
just the entirety, just the synopsis, the log line.
Basically, it's another Michael Crichton theme park gone wrong.
It's the original Michael Crichton theme park.
Yeah,
gone wrong.
Basically. This guy has created really intelligent AI that inhabit this Western themed theme park, and really rich people are able to pay a lot of money and be transported into this world, and where they can, sort of like a video game, they can go on quests or just have sex with the innkeepers and everything. I mean, as far as the story goes, it's all about AI and sentience, and I don't even know like how to tiptoe around like
some of the deeper themes.
Yeah,
I thought it was very similar to a movie that I really liked from a couple years ago. The demo wasn't as high on, at least the ending.
Ex Machina. I really enjoyed that movie. It's just the when. I don't want to spoil that movie either, but I felt like the ending of the movie was discongruent with the movie itself. I was expecting a more intellectual ending, I suppose, a more philosophical one.
And I loved the way that movie ended, and I loved the way the show ended, but we'll get there.
I feel like I'm behind on the recent AI and like consciousness sentience stories. Like, I didn't see her Ex Machina. I still haven't seen, like,
need to see her.
So I feel like even at that though, I felt like it was some stuff was being rehashed definitely with Westworld. It kind of to me struggled to be really original. However, I feel like I'm getting like ahead of the I'm like opening fire and shots. First impressions for me were that I really did like it though. I thought that because I was worried that the whole thing was going to turn into, oh, we have Anthony Hopkins, and it was more than that.
I mean, you actually, there are fan theories out there about what you just said. Like, you know, was the ending really the ending that we thought we saw, or is that just part of this huge elaborate, you know, story within the story? I mean, one of the things I really did like about it that I haven't seen in other AI things is this notion of loops. I thought that was a really cool allegory to, you know, kind of examining one's own life. You know, I go to work, I come back home, I watch my TV or I play my video game or I read, and then I go to bed and then I wake up and I repeat it. Like, that's my personal loop. Yeah. I thought that was pretty cool that, you know, that's how they refer to the days of all the different hosts.
Yeah, so to get a little bit more into the nitty-gritty of what the show's about, basically people can rent these vacations where they interact with the robots in the West, and the robots are on their pre-programmed storylines that they can deviate from slightly within the context of what the visitors are doing. But for the most part, their stories are basically the same, and those are called their loops. But what starts happening in the show is, for whatever reason, a couple of the characters start deviating from their loops a little bit too much, and they're not really sure, is it a bug or is it them becoming more sentient or aware of there are some elements, like maybe their subconscious is starting to take over, or maybe it's somebody controlling everything. So the show's definitely most rooted in sci-fi, but it also has some mystery elements.
Mm. Yeah, Anthony Hopkins' character really loves the idea of playing God and creating these really elaborate stories. And his ex-partner who helped him create the park was all about advancing AI. So in order to make the AI smarter, they need to sort of program fake memories into them. And mm-hmm. you sort of see things go badly, I guess.
You know, there ends up being like this tension between the entertainment in the park and, like, you know, that being the bottom line of this company, and then also some of the original creators and, like, their philosophies behind, like, building this beautiful kind of machine to become, you know, something almost like beyond human, or to be, you know, almost like there's almost an artfulness to the approach of one of the creators mm-hmm. and how he's looking at it. And that always, one of the other central conceits of the show is just how that bumps up against the need for the park to be an entertainment mm-hmm. spot and for it to maintain that. Because then there's also the whole thing of people are going to the park and doing these really terrible things to the robots. Mm-hmm. So, like, to me, one of the coolest parts about the show is how that was used to, like, show you a different kind of a, you know, some episodes are really, like, gory, because you were saying that's how mm-hmm. some of the guests would play it, and then other mm-hmm. ones are played more, you know, it turned into almost like a revisionist Western.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What I really like about that use of showing how some of the guests are, if not downright immoral, maybe trying to let loose some of their more immoral tendencies, and then, you know, possibly going home and living a normal, law-abiding life. And it's very similar to me, maybe a couple steps removed, but from a game like Grand Theft Auto,
mm-hmm.
where you're doing really immoral things. This is just...
But it's in a game, so you don't, like... It's okay, really. You can do whatever you want, but this takes it a step further by... Mm-hmm. Like,
it takes it a step further, but at the same time, if they weren't so lifelike, you would never think twice about,
yeah,
you know, shooting a robot that you know is just going to get rebuilt the next day and doesn't really have emotions, or it doesn't really have feelings. But then when they're so lifelike, is it going a little bit too far? And then we were talking the other day about a character that we didn't like, which is the British writer character who almost gets written off a couple episodes in, but he actually does bring that point up about he doesn't like what the so-called reveries, which are these mm-hmm. little nuances mm-hmm. to the characters that make them more mm-hmm. realistic. He actually doesn't like those because it goes a little bit too far. He wants to have one level back still where you know it's a robot.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess we didn't really say this earlier, but the robots in this Western world are... they're humans. They're not like metal and like
you can't tell the difference
between them when you're looking or even really talking to them.
That's even kind of talked about in the show, just about how they're constructed. And when we enter the series as viewers, they're being constructed with like high level plastic.
I love the opening credits.
They're kind of being like built almost like a 3D printer.
Yeah, process. That's a good way to.
Whereas it talks about how one of the guests who like has been hanging around the park for a long time, one of the central characters, we'll probably get into in a little bit, he mentions how the older models were like, you know, full of metal and shiny and
the way you think of a robot.
He said they were like clockwork, you know, and like how they all fit together and exactly. Like more, and I think it's,
but he's like lamenting that fact that they've gone away from that too. It was a cool scene.
I think you guys are right about the British writer's character. I think that really opens up a lot in the series, just about like how like we enjoy these like violent images. I think there's definitely a commentary on that, and how mm-hmm. you know, the more realistic it is, it's just really opening up like more and more mm-hmm. questions about the player's morality.
I was gonna say what this whole series kind of reminds me of how Donald Gleason's character felt in Ex Machina, where he wasn't sure at some point mm-hmm. whether he was human or not, and he had to check his... That scene where he cuts open his arm was disgusting, but in this whole show, you're not sure who could be mm-hmm. a real person or who could be a machine. And
yeah, and the
they play with that a lot.
Yeah, the show's mysterious enough that you suspect that there may be more going on.
Like, when they first introduced that British guy, his acting was so over the top and annoying to me that I was like...
Anthony Hopkins?
His name's like Sizemore or Sizeman. I don't remember that actor's name, but he was just so over the top that
Lee Sizemore.
I swear that he was a robot, and I was like,
so let's talk about the acting, because there's
quickly comment on the opening credits, though, because I love them as well.
I never skipped them, which is kind of rare, because it was not a short opening sequence, but the music and the imagery of the robots being like created and
there's the creation of the robots, there's an act of lovemaking between two of the robots as they're being built, which is kind of a comment on a Genesis,
and someone playing the piano while they're making love.
Someone's playing the piano, and that's my favorite part, actually, is there someone's playing a robot is playing the piano, and then it takes its hands away, so all of a sudden it's breaking programming, and yet the piano itself keeps playing by itself. So it's this, again, this idea of automaticity,
mm-hmm.
and you know, the piano, that machine's still doing what it's supposed to be, mm-hmm. but there's this breaking of, I'm not going to be playing along with this charade anymore kind of thing. I love that.
And player pianos actually are seen a lot in the background of the show, which I think is another, like, of all the instruments you could use, it's an instrument that's a machine that's programmed to do what it's supposed to do. Yeah. And it literally loops paper.
Yeah, loops. Yeah, right on. Bringing it full circle.
Nice.
Did you get a BioShock Infinite feel from that too? The anachronistic use of music. Love that.
Yeah, a little. I don't know, when they played the modern music on those old timey pianos, I don't know if I was a huge fan of that. Like the
pink, I do pink know, black. And I was a huge fan of that.
I was not a huge fan.
I loved it.
No surprises. I was like, oh, it's brilliant. I loved it.
The only thing that I didn't like about it is that it would like a little bit take me out of it, but not in a bad way, because I'd be like, oh, it's Soundgarden.
It didn't take me out of it. It put me like more into the experience, because I thought about why they would do that, and it's so that their guests are walking around and hear that, and they kind of chuckle themselves. It's to kind of let you know, it's like an Easter egg. In imagining it as a guest would, and that they'd probably have the same reaction as any of us. Like,
they had the same reaction that we're having watching it.
I was just gonna say, it was a little fourth wall breaking to me, and I guess when they brought you into that world, I was in that Western world, and when you hear that modern music, I'm like, this is a little weird, but
it's not.
I guess it makes
sense. It's not a Western though, right? You know what I mean?
But I mean, some people, as a guest, you're really supposed to be immersed in that world, and then they play, I don't know, Rolling Stones, and it's a little weird.
I wonder about that, because I felt like the guests were supposed to be immersed in the Westworld story, not like a real world. So kind of like
they're role playing.
They're even in kind of a fictional, like, West. I mean, the whole thing with like the new Confederates, which, I mean, that's like our new administration. That's what I've been calling them. The new Confederacy.
Not Jeff Sessions.
What were those guys called in Westworld, though? They were...
I missed this. I don't remember.
They were like in these like rebel uniforms, and they were like... the guy who talks about how war is the greatest... It's the greatest thing that his flesh has ever tasted, basically. He's like, my flesh has tasted greater pleasures than these. War.
Yeah, it was very Duval in Apocalypse.
And they're like these like former Confederate soldiers. So, and they were fighting a war against... In Westworld, they're like fighting a war on the border or something like that, which is like not American history.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like Westworld is kind of... Guests know that when they show up, they're in a almost fictional... kind of setting.
Yeah, sure.
So let's talk about the acting, because the acting in the show, for the most part, is excellent.
A couple misses.
A couple misses.
I'm curious about that. Hear about that first.
About the misses?
Not the only miss, but one of the misses that I thought was a miss, but Nick and everyone else is probably not going to say, is Evan Rachel Wood I know she's, I know. She's incredible. She's, whatever she does, it's perfect and whatever. But I don't know if, like, for some reason, maybe it's her writing. I couldn't take.
Wait. So
to be clear, that is not at all how I talk.
You're thinking.
I didn't.
So you're dissenting. You think that she's not all that. And
I thought she had a. We're talking about Dolores, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which her name is great. I think we talked about this like real briefly.
Yes, we did.
Dolores.
Yeah.
Very similar to Dolores with two O's in Spanish for pains.
Dolores, pain is.
Yeah. Pain is. But I thought she was fantastic. Some of the scenes where her and Bernard are talking and she has to go back and forth very quickly.
Yeah. Sometimes that sort of stuff's cool.
Sometimes in the same cut to being.
Showing emotion or just wiping.
Yeah, to being a person to being just a computer.
Yeah.
I was very impressed by her. I've seen her in other things. Like she's in The Wrestler. She's in a movie called 13, which I'm not that big of a fan of. The Wrestler I'm a huge fan of, but she doesn't. She's not what shines in that movie.
No.
Really, it's hard to outshine Mickey Rourke in that film.
Mm.
But this is, I think, by far the best thing that she's ever done in terms of her performance. I thought she was great in it. I thought Tandy Newton was great.
Yeah, she was.
The actress who plays Maeve. Yeah, and then we haven't really even talked about Ed Harris yet.
Oh, my God. Ed Harris, and how about... I mean, there's so many strong performances.
Yeah. The scene with Ed Harris and Anthony Hopkins. Did anyone else get a Heat vibe? Like De Niro and Pacino finally facing off?
De Niro and Pacino for sure.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think though that Ed Harris for me was probably the one that I noticed the least just because I felt like he, cause I did feel like it was like by now he's honed Ed Harris, like that Ed Harris villain so well that there was a feeling of like familiarity.
Yeah, there. Like in Apollo 13 when he plays the murderous villain.
Yeah, I was actually I was actually really impressed with like the newer actors. Like I felt like they not really outshone. They just kind of really stepped up. Like Marsden did really good.
Yeah.
James Marsden.
Yeah. And Jeffrey Wright, I think, was my favorite.
Yeah, character. I think Jeffrey Wright is fantastic.
Who did Jeffrey Wright play?
He's Bernard.
Bernard.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was awesome.
Jimmy Simpson.
Yeah, I thought Jimmy Simpson was awesome.
Like that blew me away because I am so used to him as
being a McPoyle.
Being a McPoyle and like being so over the top, and yet he
to go from the McPoyle, one of the McPoyle twins from It's Always Sunny to this is like a pretty great
jump. I was
really
shocked by that. Yeah. Because I was expecting to hate that character after the first appearance, then like he totally turned it around.
Yeah, the arc of that character, without spoiling anything, is it's just one of the all-time great TV arcs, I think.
It really does. It turns into that. And it's it becomes one of the all-time great Western arcs. Like, I think that's,
me,
Westworld, the coolest thing about it is, like, as mentioned earlier, it could be different kinds of Western because, I mean, sometimes it's like the quick and the dead. Like during the town shootout, it's so cartoonish and over the top. Yeah, and then other times when Ed Harris is playing, it's like
it's
the Searchers times turn up to 11.
It's the Searchers Unforgiven,
right? And it's like it's really cool to see how they can they play with the whole Western genre and it remains firmly tongue in cheek. It can also like bring you in and kind of immerse you in it. I thought Marsden, I thought like when he's playing with Ed Harris, like towards the end, Ed Harris is playing at such a high level that the characters around him step up.
Mm-hmm.
And like, to me, it was cool to see those kind of like game elements like shown in the show that if you're playing at like expert level, your NPC is going to step his game way up.
I bet. Yeah.
Yeah. And Ed Harris is even surprised by that at one point. Like, wow, you've really changed.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I like that. I really liked him in 30 Rock. He plays Chris Cross, Lennon's boyfriend, and then ultimately husband. He's pretty great in that show.
Mm. Huh.
Yeah. One actress that I didn't like, and I didn't recognize her until after I'd finished the show. But the girl who plays Teresa, her name in real life is Sid. I want to say it's Sidze Babette Knudsen. She was in a movie from a couple years ago called Duke of Burgundy, where there's
the Anchorman story.
Yes. Yeah. It's Anchorman 3, where he becomes a duke.
Yeah.
No, there's basically only like two characters in the entire movie, and she's one of them, and she was fantastic in it. And I did not recognize her at all, but I loved her performance in that movie as much as I really just did not like her or her character in
the
show.
Is she the chain smoking like CEO?
Yeah.
Or
yeah,
director
the one
business.
The one whose accent was all over the place for like the entire
I didn't
time
know
she was on.
For pretty much the entire show, whether or not she was supposed to have an accent or not.
Yeah, like she didn't even know, it seems like. It's like, I don't know if that was on purpose or.
I just couldn't tell what it was.
Yeah.
And I actually thought she did a really good job. I think I'm the only person here who liked her performance.
It seems like my opinion is in the minority among people online, because people seem to really like her.
I thought she did really well. I thought I was really impressed with. Like, characters being betrayed, I think it's hard to show. Because I feel like an actor knows that's coming, like, so far in advance, that it's... And no, I guess that's a major spoiler.
Yeah.
I was just like, we put up our spoiler block?
Yeah. How far have we gone into this?
Gonna get it.
As far as maybe time or...
Yeah, time.
I can't read the time.
Oh, good. Let's just go full blown spoilers now.
Seeing you just like with the glasses,
numbers down there. I don't know. There's 70s and
I really want to get into this. Yeah,
yeah.
If you have not yet seen Westworld, I would recommend tuning out because you really should watch the show.
Why would you watch a show reviewing Westworld if you haven't seen Westworld?
Well, if it's on the radio, that's the question.
Yeah, people are just hearing it.
I almost feel like
put all of our friends
bonus content.
Maybe it should.
It should be bonus content. Like that'll be the first half will be our episode, and then
Well, then let's finish up because there's still some other stuff to say about the show. Yeah. I think that we can get into before spoiling it. So if you haven't seen Westworld, keep listening.
I love that. Are we taking a pause or something?
No. No. Why did you stop?
I don't know.
Did you break?
No, I didn't break, but I was starting to talk, and you guys all looked at me like I was doing something wrong.
I think Kyle's going off his loop. No, we looked at you because you were talking.
Pause simulation. Analyze. Yeah, well, what prompted that response?
All three of you guys looking at me at the same time is a rare thing. what I liked as far as how the story kind of unfolds with the show is that they constantly go back and forth between inside the park, outside the park, and then later on in the show, you'll realize that the storytelling is kind of all over the place, which is kind of a sloppy way to describe it. But I loved seeing the sort of behind the scenes stuff of what it takes to put the park together,
mm-hmm.
and then inside the park. I actually kind of preferred the sort of sterile glass scenes and stuff with Anthony Hopkins interacting with older AIs and mm-hmm. Bernard and the girl from Raising Hope.
Yes,
forget her name.
Elsie.
She's incredible.
She's also great in it. She's got a very a pretty small role. She could have been given much more to do because I thought she was great. She's Bernard's kind of.
Oh yeah,
not
she's
sidekick,
one of my favorite characters.
Like, his assistant,
like,
or,
flat out one of my favorite characters.
She's fantastic.
Yeah,
in it.
Yeah, she was great.
Yeah, and
same thing with the two technicians. Didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's cool. I was gonna say I preferred the when they were removed from the park and kind of working on the AI and stuff. In auditioning them or training them and stuff, I thought that was a little more interesting to me.
Yeah, you know, that was my second biggest fear when I heard about the show and actually like watched the trailer and everything and saw how they wanted to focus on the real world aspect.
Mm-hmm.
I was so worried about that part of it because I'm like, how are you going to go from this excitement of these, you know, fights with, you know, Native American bands and gunfights and all this stuff that they were showing on the trailer to.
The code is wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
yeah.
So I was
the,
like,
the reveries.
I was blown away by that, mm-hmm. by how good those scenes were, mm-hmm. and how fleshed out those characters were. And like you said, like how one thing that was cool was that they were all at work, which ended up playing totally into the story, the emotions of the story and everything. Some of the characters, that's like, they're, I mean, when you think about the kind of career this is,
yeah,
and it could be, and the pay that some of them make, I mean, by the time, when you're the British writer,
yeah,
like, it's kind of implied that it's like,
yeah,
the highest levels
of
like creation there. Oh yeah, it's like way,
well, it's basically it's basically there. Like, you know, the late 21st century version of a video game designer, or today,
or like meets like the top paid Disney Imagineer,
like, yeah, mm-hmm, yeah, something like that. Like, they're just storytellers and then, you know, computer engineers. I do think, like, you said it surprised you how well the behind the scenes things contrasted with the action of the park itself, but it's really just the same formula as Jurassic Park. In the movie itself, Westworld, the film from 1973, was a Michael Crichton movie that he actually directed. It's one of a few movies that he directed. And I watched that after finishing the show, and it really does seem like a cross between a trial run for Jurassic Park and then a predecessor to
The Terminator.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's much more similar to those films than it is to kind of the philosophical underpinnings of this show. And I think the show is far better than the film because of that. But you can see how he kind of was feeling out, oh, I could create a park and then do this. And then, you know, 20 years later, I don't know when he wrote the book Jurassic Park, but 20 years later when the film Jurassic Park came out, it works much better. And like much more smoothly. The action's much better.
There's even,
and the villains in that are far better than
even that whole immersion thing. And like in the original movie, is like parts of it are like do not hold up.
No,
like it's very hokey.
It's not a terrible
cheesy
movie, but it's
and
very
some of that
cheesy.
How they
it's
play dated. It, how the actors play it when they go into the park. It's like, yeah, I think, you know, that whole thing around, you know, the gravity of what he was trying to show. He was still kind of,
It was more of a popcorn flick,
yeah,
I think. Like,
yeah,
they weren't.
And I actually haven't read any Michael Crichton novels. And
I would check out a couple.
I kind of like
Michael.
Eaters of the Dead is worth it, I think.
I guess, yeah, that's the only one I've read.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
Eaters
so you,
of the Dead.
You're
yeah,
so you lied.
Just the one. Yeah, so I guess I forgot about that. Because I'm like, oh, yeah. I
you must have really liked it.
I always forget that he did that one because it's like, it's this tiny book, and all the other ones I think of are like,
yeah.
I've only I just remember thinking Eaters of the Dead, the book, was like, man, this is so much, like, in a way better than the movie, and in a way
it's a different
totally
experience.
Different. Like, yeah, it's just this totally different thing.
It definitely is more real world. Like,
yeah,
the book's
so much more
Game
scholarly and
like gritty.
Seriously,
yeah.
Serious. And whereas the book just turns, or the movie turns into this popcorn.
So we got off the topic of the acting, and I can't, if I was listening to this podcast, I'd be upset if no one brought up the person who comes in from corporate to essentially replace
Tessa Thompson.
Is she the one who replaces the intermittent accent lady?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
not replace
of.
Her. She works alongside her.
She already works. She's already above her.
Yeah.
She's
already above
she's,
her.
Yeah. She's like on the board of directors or something to that effect.
I could not take her.
I really like her as an actress in other things.
I think her character was kind of unnecessary.
Her
in the show.
Her character, I'm not blaming her. Her character was not good.
Yeah, it was very 2D.
I can't even.
And the way she was
like,
introduced,
I had to agree because it's like, you know, the whole thing. I think that was my biggest question: was why is this character here?
Mm-hmm.
And then,
and I still don't know.
I still don't know. And love her as an actress.
Really?
I mean, I think Dear White People's great, and
I
actually
still
was just talking about this.
I saw
yesterday.
on your Facebook you were talking about,
and just how it's basically just an update of School Days, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, Dear White People is amazing.
See, I haven't seen Dear White People, but I loved her. I think the same year she was in Creed as Adonis Creed's girlfriend, and she's great in that movie.
Man, you know, and that right there, because looking, I'm like, oh, of course that was her. Loved her performance in that, and. Huh. Something about this one, I'm with you, like, the character is a problem. I think, you know, Kyle mentioned, like, how she was introduced. I was really, like, that felt really exploitive to me. In that, it felt like the typical like Game of Thrones.
Sex position.
Yeah. Yeah, like, yeah. It was like, wow, this is so, like, come on, HBO. I mean.
Yeah, I agree. They just, maybe what they did is they had a different person in charge of writing each for each character, and they just had an intern write for her.
Yeah.
Cause
it was very, but even her,
it was no good.
The way that she would deliver the lines, maybe that goes back to the writer, the lines themselves, but it was so, you know, I don't know.
I think part of the issue is for that character to be that character, that young and controlled that much, you have to, you know, and we know, okay, real world, she inherited it. Mm-hmm. She was placed on the board because of a relationship with somebody, or like she's this like super brilliant person. Like anybody that young at that age
has to be like a wonder kid,
right? At that age, as soon as I saw, like, I'm like, why do they have Tessa Thompson playing this character that's like this, right? A wonder kid is always hard to pull off, and I think that I just didn't get enough background about that character. So, like,
if she was supposed to be a wonderkind,
gotten more like of how she got to her position or who she was, then like I would have felt probably better about the whole performance. I think I just didn't know enough about her to make any connections or anything.
I got the feeling that she didn't either, though.
Yeah, like, her character doesn't do anything that's brilliant. She either does what anyone else in that position would do, or she gets hustled.
Yeah,
and she gets made to look very foolish.
Being like, they kind of almost, I'm left with the impression that she was like a spoiled rich kid on a board because of the way they like play the character would seem to be written, not knowing, you know, because that was the
but
thing.
Then they could have played that
out smart.
They should have played that up a little bit more to like, this is incompetence coming to take over. Somebody who
just has a connection to it, which that would have made sense to be in the story. Mm-hmm. Yet I just thought it was
like
kind of
a soliloquy
handled.
About how her line got pulled from Nordstrom's. Maybe
I was trying to think of a way to.
I've been wondering how long it's going to take to start. We actually already had the New Confederacy thing, the sessions. It's so I'm struggling with the what have I done list.
I know.
Future episode 125. Stay tuned.
Yeah, before we are we ending in a second?
Yeah, should we? Do you guys want to wrap it up? And then for radio listeners, they can find us online to find spoiler talk if they.
Yeah, how long is this episode?
It's gonna be pretty long, probably.
Yeah, we've been going.
But what I was gonna say is, last thing, real quick, young Anthony Hopkins. I still have no idea how they do it. I'm assuming it's like
so. Speaking of the Terminator, they actually invent a time machine. They send the DP back in time. They film at Anthony Hopkins.
Oh, is that why?
They put it in a safe.
Okay.
And then 50 years later.
I heard there was a rotoscoping technique as well. Like where they take the footage of that Anthony Hopkins from the safe, and then they just actually have a real actor.
Wear in an Anthony Hopkins face. Yeah.
They draw it live.
Yeah, a full Anthony Hopkins bodysuit.
All right.
Anyway.
So that is our spoiler-free talk. If you're listening to this on the radio, you can find us online where we're going to talk about some spoilers. And you can find our old episodes online, too. Sir, where would they go to find more of our stuff online?
On the tropes.podomatic.com.
Yeah. Or iTunes.
On
Stitcher.
iTunes.
Stitcher. Wherever else one gets...
Wherever podcasts. Else fine podcasts are sold.
There you go.
It's free.
What's everybody's Twitter? What's everyone's Twitter? You have one, Nick?
My Twitter is from Akron, Ohio.
I am at CIRJR. So that's Sir Jr. Yeah.
Did I need to say that you have to put an at before before mine?
I don't know.
Will they not find you otherwise?
At Thermos Politics, but... pretty much all I do is retweet your stuff. stuff.
Yeah. I have one for my other podcast, at Giant Robot Party. But it's not a very
active.
Well used Twitter account.
Yeah, mine is mostly just retweeting like political pundits. And
Stephen King.
King. It's been pretty good lately. The Twitter, I feel like it's ripe. It's a good time for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, it's the best time.
It's a great
Stephen King and J.K. Rowling are like some of their best writing is right now.
This is like off on a tangent and unrelated to Westworld, but it's a great place to get news because you can get the news so much faster than the news will give you the news.
Definitely.
Like for the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals decision, I found out within about 5 seconds.
Oh, yeah. Like that's where I went for any of the confirmations, anything.
Yep. You find out stuff immediately.
And then a lot of the controversial Twitter tweets will get deleted immediately after they are written.
Yeah. You'll see tweets that have been misspelled, and then a half hour later they will be deleted.
Yeah.
Or sometimes they won't, like when you're the Department of Education.
Someone will always have a screenshot of them. So,
my biggest tweet was taking advantage of a misspelled trending hashtag, the Bowling Green Massacre.
Oh,
because it was spelled with one S.
One S.
So I said that in the Davos textbook, the Bowling Green Massacre will be spelled Bowling Green Massacre with one S.
Yeah. It's really good.
I think my most liked tweets are me trying to antagonize Ohio Senate hopeful Josh Mandel.
Oh, my God. Listeners, can we talk about Josh Mandel for a little bit?
Listeners, do not vote for Josh Mandel. Vote for Sherrod Brown, please.
I'm gonna have to get back to Nick about whether or not we're allowed to say this on air of reactant status. I'm pretty sure we can. Josh Mandel is the worst. Josh Mandel will take this entire state into the dark ages. We will have no water, no food. We'll have radioactive crops, everything you can think of. If Josh Mandel,
this talk sounds eerily similar to when we were talking about Trump.
He wants to be Trump, only he doesn't have he doesn't have the charm of Trump.
I know, but man, we were talking about the different sectors that we'd all be segregated into when Trump becomes president. And anyway.
Yep. I'm still waiting for my train ticket.
Yep.
Anyways, so you can find us online. You can also find us at facebook.com/onthetropes. And head over there to wherever you find podcasts if you want to hear us talk about some spoilers for the show Westworld. As always, I've been your host, Nick. We have been
Sir
Tamo
and Kyle,
and join us again next week when we'll be stuck on the trips.